Hi, it's Peter Pack, and thanks for tuning in to the Players Podcast. We're excited about the new year and the new season of shows that we have lined up. And today's show certainly gets us off on a great foot. Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that is near and dear to a lot of people in high school today, and for those players who are looking to go on to college and play in college, and that is recruiting for college in a pandemic environment. So coronavirus has impacted, you know, virtually all walks of life, and college recruiting, any sport, is no exception. And as you'll learn today in our discussion, there are a lot of nuances to the challenges and the dynamics that the pandemic has placed on the recruiting process. And it's not just now, but for years to come because of some of the dynamics that are at play here. And so we know you'll get a lot out of this discussion. And to break it all down for us, we have a fantastic group of panelists to talk about this. First, we have Jeff Nangala from NC State's men's program, as well as Tim Santoro from NC State's women's program. A little bit of an all Wolfpack affair, but two gentlemen who have, you know, as much experience as anybody in the college game today, two programs right there at the heart of it in the ACC. You know, certainly one of the most competitive conferences in the country. And our third guest is Travis Clark from Top Drawer Soccer. Travis is one of the editors there, and both individually as well as institutionally, sits atop the spectrum of youth soccer and just has a great perspective of what's going on from a big picture standpoint. And so, you know, we've got a great group. It's a fantastic discussion, one that I think a lot of people will get a lot out of. So thanks for listening and enjoy.
The Players Podcast is dedicated to soccer players. Our goal is to provide discussion which stimulates the minds of players and serves as another opportunity to learn about the game and how to play the game. We'll explore a wide range of topics with some of the best coaches and the most interesting people in soccer today, with the goal of helping players enjoy their journey in the game.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us today. We've got a great show lined up with a lot of great discussion points talking about college recruiting in a pandemic, coronavirus chaos. February 2021, here we are, and the recruiting process for college soccer, as well as all other college sports, has been turned upside down, and today we have a great cast of people to talk about that. I'll just briefly introduce them, and then they can give a little bit of background about themselves. Travis Clark from Top Drawer Soccer, Tim Santoro from NC State's women's program, and Jeff Nangala from NC State's men's program. And so, Travis, if you don't mind just giving a brief background on yourself and Top Drawer Soccer.
Sure. I am the director of content at Top Drawer Soccer, and basically we cover elite, non-professional soccer in the United States is one way to put it. That's club soccer, college soccer, those sorts of things, youth national teams, when youth national teams exist. And I've been doing this for almost 10 years now, covering, you know, college recruiting, club soccer, a bunch of different things. Wish I had a bigger staff, but we try and do our best. TopDrawerSoccer.com is the website, in case you listeners out there are curious to check it out.
Great, thanks. Tim?
Yeah, I've been the head coach at NC State for just about 8 years now. Took over a program that had a two-decade hiatus from winning, and we're just in the process of putting it back together. We've had four pretty good years now, and just want to continue that.
Okay, fantastic. Jeff?
Peter, thanks for having us. Been at NC State now as the assistant coach since 2017. We're going on 4 years. Past experiences have taken me through Boston College, Pittsburgh, Orlando City Academy, and a good amount of time at UNC Chapel Hill, 10 years, and then in Spartanburg, South Carolina, South Florida, in between Spartanburg and UNC. So been recruiting, coaching, teaching, scouting in college since 1999, with a two-year gap as I left for Orlando City to work with the academy.
Fantastic. So, you know, a wide range of experience, some of the top programs in the entire country. So quite a bit of pedigree here on the show today, myself excluded. So anyway, thanks again, Jen, for being on here. And so why don't we just start with the current status of class recruiting? And, you know, let's start with the 2021s. But maybe just before we get into kind of each class, you know, Travis, as someone who sits maybe at a more global level, looking at everything across the landscape, what are your thoughts on where we are from a recruiting standpoint at this point in the cycle relative to a normal year, just as a general point based on your observations?
Yeah, I think that the two coaches on the phone call can obviously share their perspective at their programs and where each class stands, but things are a little bit different now. For if you're looking, especially beyond Division I programs, I would say where, you know, it's uncertain. And actually, I'm not even 100% clear on where things stand for international recruits. You know, that's a bit of a bigger sort of piece of the recruiting puzzle. And, you know, will international students be able to come here easily? I know that some programs probably have had issues getting people over there and that kind of a thing, but it's definitely a different point. And I think that, you know, we're still seeing the ramifications even for 2021, still yet to be determined.
Okay, great. So for Tim and Jeff, you know, it seems just in general from just, you know, reading things and seeing things, talking to people, that the 2021s are pretty much done. Would you say that's true for your programs? And as you look, talking to colleagues across the board, is that pretty accurate? Or do you think there's still some activity left to happen there? And Jeff, why don't we start with you on that?
Yeah, I think it's accurate. We feel good about our class. We think there might be room for one more addition. But at the moment, we've got a pretty good head start on 21. So we feel good about it. And adding one would help. What's helped has been that some of our seniors will come back for an additional year based on the NCAA granting them another season. So that doesn't put us in a position where we have to go get more than one or two or three for 21. So, we feel good. All of them have been, all but two have been identified in person. So that's good. A few we had to take on video because of the pandemic. And of course, if we add one more, it's more than likely going to need to be someone that we sign through video and just good sources. We feel good.
Okay, great. And definitely that gap-year dynamic is a big topic we want to get to. But Tim, looking at your 2021s, is it fair to say that you're pretty much done and in good shape with that class at least?
Yeah, we're done our 21, and we're pretty far along with our 22s as well. The monkey wrench in all this was, we find out 4 months ago that everyone you currently have has another year of eligibility. So that's made wrapping up both classes tricky, figuring out how you're going to fit in, who you need to fit in to keep, who you're going to bring in, what your depth chart's going to look like. And, oh, by the way, the 20s didn't play in the fall for us. So we haven't even evaluated them in a season. So there's a lot of moving parts to it, but I would say a lot of the top D1 teams are done 21 and probably, if not done 22, getting pretty close.
the international thing is always the outlier that you're always looking at and seeing where you can add. But of course, now you have to keep track of entry into the country and visa status and all that kind of stuff. So it really is a lot of moving parts.
Okay. And let's just use that, Tim, to maybe pivot into the 2022s. It seems from just the sidelines, I guess, that that really is the class that will be the most impacted by this the pandemic restrictions and the dead periods that have been extended here. And so, you know, it sounds like you're pretty far down the road, and I'm guessing a lot of other elite programs are as well. But so maybe, you know, talk about, like, how your 2022s, how that shaped, and was the pandemic restriction process, did that impact, how much did that impact your 2022s, and maybe any other thoughts for other programs, you know, not at the NC State level, and how the 2022 class may be impacted?
Yeah, I mean, it had a major impact. I mean, June 15th of last year was when we could officially contact 2022s. Well, 3 months before that, everything got cut off. So evaluation stopped, and then we could call the kids. But since we've been able to call them, we haven't been able to evaluate them. We haven't been able to have them on campus. So, you know, that class has really probably felt the brunt of a very odd recruiting process. And then you throw in the fact that the NCAA gives every current player an additional year. It's in flux for them, and I feel for them. I think they're going to go through some tough times. I think you're going to have people that either got commits for that class or were close to getting commits for that class that now have returning players that will come back. You can't fit all that in a 14 scholarship equivalency. It's going to be interesting to see how that is juggled. So it's been, the pandemic has really affected things in terms of how the NCAA has reacted, and that's, you know, that's a whole other debate. But the impact is going to be felt with families, with kids, based on how some coaches will make decisions, how to handle both their players and their recruits, committed and uncommitted.
Okay. And so just for context, you said that you're pretty far down the path. In a normal year, let's say, sitting in February, what percent of your, I guess it would be not this fall, but next fall's incoming class, what percent would you have committed? And then compare that to what percent you have committed today, just to provide some context.
Yeah, I mean, I would, that's a good question. I would say 60%, 70%. I mean, if we had been doing evaluations and visits and in the normal process, you'd probably be, I would say our focus right now would be starting to go on to the next class, because the 23s we can start contacting in June. So we'd probably predominantly evaluating them this whole time and maybe just touching up the 22s. But now it's that's a little different. And again, I can only speak for myself. There's some schools that were done the 22s early, how they pulled that off when we had a dead period and we can't evaluate. I guess leave that to your own assumption. But then you also wonder, will some of those kids that are committed, will that change based on all this? So, you know, whether someone's 60%, 100%, you don't know what the thinking is right now because there's so many moving parts.
Yep. No, that makes sense. So, you know, maybe just to put some numbers around that. So in a normal year at this point, you might be 80%, you say, maybe doing some touch-up work. And right now you're maybe, I don't know, 50%, something like that. Is that a reasonable?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Jeff, it's different on the men's side. There's been a culture on the women's side of early commits. Men's side, that never really took hold. But just looking at the 2022s for where you guys are, just to provide some compare and contrast, you know, kind of where are you now on a percentage basis and where would you be in a normal year without these restrictions?
No, I think the men's side's started to follow the woman in terms of speeding up commitments. And of course that changes, but slowing down is okay. I like that personally for various reasons. At the moment, our 2022 class is, I'm not sure if I can put a percentage, but it's probably not even at 50%. Certainly, because of the pandemic, no question about it. For three kids that have committed for 22, things are slowing down for us a little bit just because of kids, seniors returning and getting that extra year. So having to figure out the roster size and the limits that we have and how we proceed with the 22 class. The positive, one positive for the 22 class is that our list of prospects, we've a good amount of them have been identified in person. So that's good. However, since there's been a stop to recruiting and in person, I don't think we've had enough opportunities to follow up and watch them live in person, whether that's at training or games. But what we have done is at least followed up with some video. So that's been a good resource for us. I think just based on what Tim was talking about, I think we'd be further along if this pandemic didn't hit us. I think we'd probably be a few more kids in and verbally committed or signed. And so at the moment, just based on us not having any more follow-ups or in-person evaluations, I think we're just slowing down, watching some video, and trying to understand how we can move forward in this climate.
Okay, great. So it sounds like your 2022s have been impacted as well, and that you're behind just based on the restrictions. I mean, that makes sense. And but it sounds like there's a lot of work to be done with that class, despite, you know, everyone doing what they can in terms of lining up prospects and having people identified. So that makes sense. So Travis, let's look ahead a little bit. As we look at the April 15th dead period that exists today, are you hearing anything about that date continuing to be there or possibly getting extended? Any chatter on that?
Yeah, I have heard that. I've talked to a couple of coaches that have heard the rumor that it might be extended. That remains to be seen. That's mostly a rumor. But either way, it wouldn't honestly surprise me, especially with the beating heart of a lot of athletic sports is the revenue sports and trying to protect football and basketball and keeping numbers down, keeping visits, from athletes suppressed. So a lot of it, I think April 15th buys the NCAA time to observe where and this is a lot of speculation. This is not me reporting anything I've heard specifically, but kind of my own guess is that NCAA can look at sort of where the pandemic is, how effective are vaccines. You know, we're talking in February, in 2 months' time, we'll probably have a better idea of what that looks like and how exactly they can sort of fit themselves around it to, you know, maybe it's a little bit, I don't know, cynical to say it's all about protecting the two sports, because maybe that's not 100% true. You can say it's about protecting people, but you know, if that's what the big revenue generators are and you want to limit, you know, whether it's coaches from other sports, whether it's official visits from potential student athletes, those sorts of things come to mind. But I think the April 15th date, there will be more data on how effective these vaccines are, even if it's not really being, you know, I assume at that point, barring a miraculous increase of the amount of vaccine there is, there's not going to be vaccines for teenagers at this point. So all that stuff is a little bit beyond what I cover on a day-to-day, but that's kind of the way I look at it and the way I speculate, because, you know, you'll have that set period of time in order to really dig deep and look. And then at the same time, you will have a number of the sports that were supposed to be played in the fall are going to be going on in the spring. So, you know, maybe the NCAA will look at that if there's a lot of cancellations, I don't know if that could impact things as well. So there's a lot of things up in the air, even if while we're chatting, all non-Division I coaches can scout in person now, which is an interesting piece of this whole discussion.
Yeah, no, that's going to be interesting because I think a lot of people are making plans, counting on that date, continuing to be there if that gets extended. It's hard to think about just how even more compressed things get from that point on, whatever that date might be. But let's just talk about what is happening now. And just from the sidelines, it seems like video, Zoom calls, because you can't do any in-person recruiting or visiting. Jeff, to your point of just accumulating a list of players that for each class. So beyond video and Zoom, Tim, is there anything else that's happening right now, or how are you guys using this time between now and April 15th in any way different than video and Zoom?
I mean, there is no way you can legally. That's the extent of it you can do with your 21, 22, no off-campus evaluation, no on-campus contact. So what you just said is the extent of it. The one thing being thrown around by the NCAA that they're strongly considering is after April 15th is instituting a quiet period till June 30th, which will only allow on-campus contact. I'll be a little more cynical about the NCAA than Travis was and say there's no reason and rationale for a lot of things the NCAA does. And that is just an example of it, how we come out of a pandemic. The first thing you do, instead of us traveling and evaluating from a distance, we're told the first thing we can do is actually have on-campus contact. That's completely backwards to what you think the progression would be coming out of this. But it's an example of the kind of things that we have to deal with the NCAA. And that's what, is being pushed right now. We don't know if it's going to pass. There's a committee meeting in March by the NCAA. But we'll wait and see. But in terms of your question, what you said is exactly what we can do. Video, Zoom, phone calls with 22, 21.
Okay. And then as we look out ahead, Jeff, as you look at the calendar, and I don't know if there's anything formal that you guys have developed in terms of a matrix for the rest of the year, but maybe in your mind, as you look at just the time frames and the milestones, maybe the natural periods of how the year plays out, and let's just say starting from now till, let's just say it holds till April 15th or whenever that period is lifted, we said, there's pretty much watch videos and do Zoom calls. Not much else you can do. What are the other natural milestone periods that you think about for the rest of the year for the recruiting process, from the summer to the fall? And just, what thoughts can you offer in terms of how you're thinking about the rest of the year playing out?
We're trying to plan and just be organized and ready. With all the prospects that we've identified that are interested, that have been recommended, is just keeping up with every single prospect, and our depth chart for 22, 23 might be a far fetch for now, but just staying organized and following their games and just trying to understand events that will come up that scheduled or have been scheduled in the past, just trying to keep up with any updates. And when we are ready to go, we're prepared. We're prepared with and organized with just the communication that we've had with the prospect family, the coaches. That's been very important. You've alluded to, the Zooms, the videos, the events, conversations with the coaches have been really good. One thing I will say is just through this chaos, which I think is how we started here, so much has changed in the dynamics of the unknowns, the uncertainty. In our case, you know, with the uncertainty early on, the 2020 class had 11 signees. Four of them didn't show up. So that impacts not only 2020, but 2021, and of course 2022, based on positions, monies, and the four didn't show up because we didn't know what was going to happen. And they decided to go to professional pathway. I think Tim probably had some of those issues as well with the girls. But amidst all this, we're just trying to stay prepared. And when we're ready, when they free us, we're ready to go and evaluate and just do more in-person meetings and evaluations.
Okay. Tim, when you think about the summer period here, it feels like there's going to be a mad dash. The restrictions are lifted. You guys are traveling to tournaments. You might be hosting your own ID camps. And there are probably some things that you guys will throw in there that you haven't done in prior years just because you want to make up for lost time and everyone's in the same boat. Is the summer going to be as crazy as it seems? Again, just from a third-party perspective of people trying to get together, make decisions, make offers, players on the other hand, you know, trying to accept offers before they expire. Like, it feels like the summer is going to be a little crazy. How do you think about that?
Yes, and yes. Everything you said, all the above, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be, the minute those restrictions are lifted, you know, people are going to be everywhere to watch kids and to get kids on campus. And to, because for us, for the women, it's not just wrapping up the 22s, but, you know, that we can start contacting the 23s on June 15th. Well, there's potential that contact date's going to come before we can evaluate them. So what's going to happen there? Are people going to go on their initial evaluation? Are they going to be patient until they can go see them in person? Are they just going to over-recruit, start offering right there, get what they need, and then offload after that? It's going to be crazy. It's going to be, the families and the kids are going to be inundated. They're going to feel the pressure of where to go visit. So, and then you're going to have, like you mentioned, the ID camp. Everyone's going to be doing an ID camp because they're going to want to get those prospects on the campus and have, you know, more direct contact with them. So it's going to be, the minute that door opens, the rush coming through is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen.
Yeah. Okay. Travis, as you think about the calendar for the rest of the year and just, you know, maybe some milestone points in the calendar, any thoughts you have based on conversations or just your own experience?
Yeah, I don't think too differently from what Tim indicated. I think, you know, there's obviously going to be delineation in men's versus women's recruiting. One thing to point out too is particularly on the men's side of things, with the, we're almost at a year since the Development Academy, or maybe we were at a year, who knows, since the Development Academy was shut down. And so on the men's side of things, there's not even a, you know, clear what are the bigger events. You know, the Boise CNL has obviously snapped up some of the clubs. MLS Next exists with very little detail outside of the, you know, the schedule they posted online. There, you know, there's a little bit more clarity on the girls' side of that with, you know, the ECNL, which is playing and hosting events still, and Girls Academy League, which was kind of raised in the offshoot. So I, you know, I think that, again, I'll go back to my point of kind of depends where we are and how people perceive through the pandemic. And, but, you know, I totally agree with Tim as well. It's, I just started thinking about how stressful it must be for some of these players, especially for the 23s, and what could happen. It's going to be very interesting for sure. And, you know, especially if there's a ruling from the NCAA that lifts the dead period and allows coaches to travel, it'll be very, very interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about video viewing showcases online and other things just during this period. Tim, how much reliance will you all put on the use of video, and how will you use it in your in your process, and will you make offers based on video without viewing the player?
Well, I mean, we use it. That's what we've been watching all the events on. For me and for my staff, for us, it's an initial evaluation. We will not make offers to a player based on just watching their events on video. We won't make an offer to a kid until we see them in person multiple times. We won't make an offer with a kid until they're on campus and we get to interact with them and their family. To me and to our staff, that's a big part of the process. So it gives you something to start on. For us here at NC State, the women's program, it's not enough of a basis to offer. We have to see them in person. We have to get face-to-face. So important.
So let's just extrapolate that for, let's say, a 2022. You sounds like you've got some of the class, but you still have the class to fill. So you watch video, you identify a player. To your point, you're not going to make an offer until all those things happen. You see them multiple times in person. You have a chance to interact with them while on campus. So again, we're getting into that summer period. If you go about your process without feeling like you've compromised an offer, it feels like that could be going into the fall before you make an offer to, let's just say, a 2022 that you've liked on video through some of these showcases and just some of the video that they're submitting. Is that an accurate time frame to be thinking about that for a 2022?
Yeah, I mean, if the rules aren't lifted, aren't changed, that's very cool. We like to think, hopefully, we'll have some of the opportunities in the summer to meet with the kids, to watch them in person. But if it goes to the fall, it goes to the fall. I mean, for us, we've had a very positive impact on our program from international. And in late summer, fall is when we'll focus on some of them for 22. So we know we always have a very good international connection, not to fall back on, but we know it's there. But I'm never going to compromise an offer or bring in someone in that I'm not 100% sure about with the idea that it might not work out or could backfire. We're a program. We've got to get it right. We've got to get our recruiting right, and we have to be thorough, and we're not going to compromise how we do that based on the pandemic or what the NCAA thinks is right or wrong. We're going to stay steadfast to the rules they put in place, and we're going to wait until we do evaluate and we do get the kids safe.
Okay. Let's go to another concept that might be being utilized now, and that is the concept of relying on the recommendations of coaches or clubs. So, Jeff, how much in this environment will you guys look at the reference of a particular coach that you view as very credible and maybe have a good track record with, or a club just more broadly? And how much will you lean into those concepts just in this environment?
100%. I agree with Tim 100%. We need to, I don't know if careful is the right word, but I think we just need to be smart about how we approach this next recruiting class. There's so much more than the X, the O, the Y, the technique, and what position, and how fast, strong. There's more to that. Just getting an understanding of who these families are. However, as I did say before, we're doing that a lot. I think there's a lot of good people out there. And if for some reason there's a decision, and I think, you know, if it's just Zoom now, and if it's, and that's where, yeah, you have to be smart. But if you feel comfortable with the kid over Zoom and the family, and you feel comfortable with the recommendation, then you have a decision to make. Or do you make that decision because you feel a little bit of pressure that others are making the decision just based on the video and they're okay with not having to see them, the prospect, or meet with the family in person? So it's interesting. But going to your point, there's a lot of
reputable, good soccer people that we're in contact with, that I do think if we had to make a decision because the NCAA has extended dead periods or just doesn't get us out, that these qualified people, I think there's a lot of good people that would lead you the right way. So we're doing that on a daily basis, on a weekly basis with coaches from all levels of clubs, not only the MLS level, ECNL level, but the whole pyramid, right? So I think the more information we can get on the player is good, but also the person, and that will be important as we continue. It's important in general before this pandemic, but even of higher importance now, just getting valuable feedback about everything and anything.
Now that makes sense, and I know that is a very consistent mantra from all coaches, is we want to know the person, you know, probably every bit as much or more than the player. And so it sounds like in this environment, it's a little harder because you can't talk to people. And so insight from others, coaches and things like that are valuable right now. Okay, let's switch to, you know, just some of the consequences or some of the unforeseen circumstances that result from this. And let's start with the gap year impact. Travis, again, just from a more global view, do you see any themes or trends about the gap year dynamic that exists? And just for everyone who's not aware, the NCAA has granted any student athlete who was on a roster this year in the, let's say, the 2021 season, an extra year of eligibility without hitting this year, no matter what happens. And so with that, you know, that in theory, it impacts 4 years of classes. Travis, do you hear much about how this gap year is going to impact things for programs?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think both Tim and Jeff had hinted at it, what the ramifications are, because there's going to be a ripple effect if it's whether it's a play, you know, maybe a senior on the roster who wants to play his or her final season of eligibility, or I guess new final season of eligibility this fall, and have a full season with the hopes that things will be as close to normal as they possibly can be by then. That's sort of one piece of it. So if you have players that decide they want to come back, then you got to have the money to make it fit. You got to have the roster spots to make it fit. And then if you're a coach building a program and you need to, you know, you want to build your roster and fit in different positions, then you maybe have a player back that you didn't expect to have, which could be a good thing, but also could be, you know, if you're expecting a player to be gone, it could be a little more difficult thing. Then, you know, one other piece to it is you have the professional element to it, where we had the NWSL and NWSL and MLS drafts recently, and like a great bulk of the players drafted in the NWSL draft specifically had made the decision to play not just the spring, but also come back for the fall. So that had, you know, it's a small pool of players or programs that impacted, but it also impacted the professional teams as well. So that was, you know, an interesting piece too. And I think that, you know, as kind of discussed a little bit, then there will be the future implications for 22s and maybe even 23s, if you want to go that further along, where if you have, you know, if your 21 class changes and that could affect your 22 class and, you know, that kind of a thing, and even 23s. Maybe I'm exaggerating it, and I, you know, the two coaches on the call could speak to specifics maybe a bit more, but I think that it's certainly going to be intriguing. And then from a competitive aspect as well, there's, you know, you look at the men's side of things, Georgetown's one of the best teams, a bunch of players drafted, but a lot of their seniors are back and have that eligibility. And I don't necessarily think they'll be back in the fall, but, you know, even them hanging on for the spring season has a competitive impact for a really experienced team that could be, you know, a good contender. So there's a lot of things that we see on the surface, and then there's just so many programs out there, it's really difficult to put a quantity on it. But I think from a, you know, a recruiting perspective, from a competition perspective, it's going to have a big impact for sure.
Okay, now that makes sense. Tim, my theory is that the gap year impact will be more pronounced on the men's side than the women's side, and less profound in, you know, maybe the higher academic institutions than others. Am I thinking about that the right way, or how do you see things from the women's side?
I don't know how it compares to the men's side, but I do believe the gap year is going to cause a lot of shakeup, meaning I think some players, families will decommit from what they've done. I think you're going to have coaches backing out of offers and verbal offers that they've already made, because you don't just have the gap year of the existing players on your roster to consider. It's going to cause transfer. There's going to be good players that a school can't keep for a fifth year, and all of a sudden we're going to have the opportunity to get that player in addition to the people we're recruiting. I don't think anything is stable in a lot of places for a lot of programs. I think there's some panic buying going on, and I think on both sides, kids' families don't want to lose an offer, so they just take one while they continue to shop, and I think coaches doing the same thing is going on. I mean, I've heard about those scenarios, and then you add in transfers who can't be welcomed back to their program for an extra year, fifth year, gap year, whatever you want to call it. I think there's going to be a lot of shakeup in the next, 12, 16, 24 months with recruiting, and it's going to affect 21, 22s, and 23s on the women's side.
Okay, so there's a lot in there that I want to just follow up on real quickly. But for someone to come back and accept a gap year, that person has to have their money continue to be there for that extra year. Is that accurate?
If someone you don't have to honor anything outside of what's already been agreed upon. The NCAA stated that this year. Normally, when you have a student athlete in a normal time period and they're signed on for that point, you have to honor that unless there's something major that happens. The NCAA has allowed you to give the extra year based on this year, but it does not have to be financially honored as is what they do most of the time.
Okay. And so,
but your equivalency doesn't change. They're not giving you more 14 scholarships. It's still what I have to work with. It's not like they say, well, you can give a gap year and we're going to increase you to 17 scholarships. That's not the case. They're saying you can keep these kids in addition to your current team and recruits. Oh, but by the way, it's still 14 scholarships. That's what makes it tricky.
Okay. So a phrase that you shared, panic buying. So you said that you see and you believe there are that's happening on both sides of the equation. Some kids accepting offers while continuing to maybe have a wandering eye and looking elsewhere. Coaches extending offers while doing the same. That sounds like a recipe for disaster. Talk about that a little bit more.
Well, it is, and it's what I mentioned earlier, and I can only speak for my program and my staff. That's why we believe it needs to be a thorough process, an evaluation, communication, meeting face-to-face, doing it the old-fashioned way. I don't believe, and I know cases already where you have a 22 that committed probably midsummer last year during the pandemic, and they've already come back onto the market and are searching again. So it is happening. It's not a theory. It's not a guess. I mean, these situations have happened. And again, I don't know which side of the equation, whether it was the coach or the family, but it is happening. And it's the very reason I just believe you stick to your guns and go through the process. And if it means you miss on a kid, you miss on a kid. But if I could put my head on the pillow at night and knowing I did right by that family and that kid, and I was thorough, then I'm fine with that. I believe there's always enough talent that if you lose a kid because their time limit was too soon, then just move on and find the next kid.
No, it's clear there's a lot of conviction in how you're how you talk about that and how you think about your process. So, Jeff, when we think about this gap year concept, let's maybe now look at this for an incoming player. And so someone who is, let's say, a senior right now, what would be a good reason for that player to maybe take a year off and enter the fray as a fall 2022? And maybe the other side of that coin, what might not be a good reason to sit out a year for that player and go ahead and pursue what's on the table now? If you can just offer us some thoughts on that based on some of the, you know, many recruits that you've had who looked at that question on the men's side.
You know, I think before this all happened, the gap year has been beneficial for a lot of kids. And it could be that they still have eligibility to play in their youth club. They might be physically less developed. There's not an expectation to come in your first year and have an impact or significance on the field. And so I think obviously it's a case by case, and based on some of these experiences, they've worked out good for the kid and the family. Didn't have to rush into the physical aspect of the next level. Got more experiences within his youth club team, perhaps developed in some other areas. And then when making the transition to the next level, prepared, ready for everything that campus has to offer. The other not so good is that where are you going to play? You're not eligible to play in your youth club. You can come in and make an impact and be significant right away. And so I think it's just a case by case with individuals that we need to address. But and you know, I think we just need to maybe just slow down a little bit and just understand what we're doing here. We're talking about a human being and his family, and and I think the human being and his family, the prospect and his family, need to understand that, you know, is this where I want to be? There's just too much chaos out there. There's too, you know, following up on what Tim said, absolutely 100% convinced of his thoughts that let's just slow down and really understand why we're doing this. What's the purpose? Does it make sense to take a gap year? Yes. Okay. Why? And let's list them for the specific individual first, right? The human being first. And let's get you on campus right away because X, Y, Z. It's a whatever it might be, and just really slow down, drive the speed limit. I think not only us as coaches, I can't talk for every single coach, but just perhaps there's a message that's being sent to the kids out there and families that, you know, what's the purpose here? Why do you want to attend a university or college to get a degree, to get an education, to have a good experience? So I don't understand all the other, you know, we'll take the offer, we'll give them the offer, and then we'll back out of the offer, and then, you know, you're over your equivalency. That just, as you said, is a recipe for just a lot of uneasy days and nights. And I don't think it bodes well for your program, because we also have to think that we do have a bunch of student athletes in our program that perhaps haven't played in their first year or second year. And we have to create an environment for growth and change in that player and that person. And so that's the first priority. And of course, recruiting is the lifeline, right? It's it's important, but it's just going to be a case by case. And I think if everyone just does the right thing, not only as coaches, but as families, as, you know, a young man and girl, everything will be okay. We'll get through this, but doing it the right way is going to be the most important thing for everyone involved.
So you said a lot in there, some good thoughts. Yeah. So for the player who is thinking about taking that gap year, sounds like if they have a productive way of spending that year from a playing standpoint, and, you know, to your point, probably also from just a personal development standpoint. So if there's a good plan available to them, they can fill out, maybe it's a physical maturation thing, that might be a good decision. Where it might not be a good decision is if they don't have that. And maybe if I want to throw another one out there to test this. If a player doesn't have maybe the options that they want right now, do you think that sitting out a year, and let's say they do have a good plan, like, is that going to create better options a year later? And I know it's case by case, but when you think about just the gap year impact on the other side of players who come back, it's not exactly, you know, accurate to say that you'll have a bunch of more spots opening up or anything like that. And so if a player maybe doesn't have what they're looking for now, should they think about, I'll have more opportunities in a year if I sit out a year, or that might not be a good decision?
Yeah. From my perspective and just past experiences, the opportunities for a certain kid, it just wasn't the right fit, not what he was looking for. And so, okay, opportunity to take a gap year or a semester. You can do that too, right? Don't have to take the full year until there's more opportunities for evaluation or being the right fit. Absolutely. And that's happened. So that is a productive way of looking at it.
All right. Two more things, and then we can wrap up here. So what can players be doing right now to just, on their end, do the best that they can and make this time productive with what's available? And Travis, maybe just as someone who sees a lot at a high level, what thoughts do you have to offer players for what they can be doing right now?
Yeah, obviously, every player is different and what makes him or her, you know, a strong player. And also it depends on where you live in the United States right now, too. Some clubs still, aren't allowed to play. California comes to mind, whereas other parts of the country, I think most parts of the country are now. I'm not going on a state-by-state basis, but I think obviously having a good highlight video gives something to coaches that they want to see more of, and I guess kind of Tim alluded to, that's going to be their first impression of a player. Then that can be, you know, a way to get an in with a program, for example, you know. And I think outside of that is doing as much work as you can on your game, whether that's in your individual sessions, whether that's, you know, working with your club coaches, having discussions about you know, what kind of player you want to be, where you want to end up. Doesn't have to be a Division I program. I think using the time now to make those decisions can be a good use of the time. And, you know, obviously trying to take care of yourself, not just on the field, but off the field. You know, mentally, it's a tough time for a lot of people in a variety of ways. So I think that not getting too hung up on little things in life. And me, as much as I don't want to downplay the process, try not to get too hung up on the recruiting process, right? There's a lot of uncertainty for a lot of people, if you listen to this, that we've just gone over. So not getting too stressed out about it, I think is a good place to be, because a lot of things are in flux and we don't know a lot of things that are going to be happening, at least in the near term. So, you know, that can be a way to put your mind at ease a bit, but, you know, if you still, hopefully you still like playing soccer and you're doing that a lot and improving as a player and working on the parts of your game that you need to work on. And I think that is a good way to make use of the time for sure. And make sure there are things that I'm missing as well.
Now that makes sense. Basically what it sounds like you said is control what you control, which is being the best player that you can be. And then also making sure your video library is up to date and what you want it to be like. So Tim, Anything to add to that in terms of what players can be doing right now?
I agree with what Travis said. I've told recruits myself, I said, look at the glass half full here, pandemic. Unbelievable chance to develop your game and improve as a player. So the next time you are seen in person, maybe you're a better version of you than what you were when we watched you 8 months ago. Yeah, of course, the video stuff we like to see, but people aren't looking how you're getting better, how you're developing. When the rules are lifted, can you be the best version of you that you are? And the only other thing we mentioned to them is just be honest. Be honest with us about your process. Dishonesty is the only thing that hurts feelings in recruiting. The truth does not. So just let us know your process, and I'm as candid with the kids as I am with you guys on this call today. So be honest, develop your game. This will end. We think it's now sooner than later, and be the best version you can be when this is all lifted.
Great. Jeff, anything else that players can be doing right now?
Watch and learn. There's a lot of soccer on TV. Of course, Travis and Tim have mentioned everything else, but I think watching and learning something that you can address in your game just by watching and learning at the higher levels is always a good thing for you.
I think that's such a fantastic point. I think it's very overlooked, is just the value of watching soccer on TV, watching it live when you can. I think that's highly undervalued in our culture. So thank you. That's a great contribution. One quick thing for both of you coaches, I want to ask, because it's something that, I think is a question in a lot of people's minds, and it's the concept of, am I barking up the wrong tree? And so you get, outreaches from players, I'm sure, hundreds a week. At what point would you say the recruit is not going to be on your radar? And what are the signals on the other end that the recruit is seeing that you may be interpreting one way? And just what thoughts do you have on when a recruit should move on from their outreach to programs? And I ask that question understanding that you two run are part of, the top of the pyramid, the absolute top of the pyramid. But even within that, when is enough for a recruit to move on?
Love for Tim to start with that one.
I mean, really, Peter, it's just honesty. Just tell them right away. Someone who fits a potential need, and then we'll see them. But the list is usually pretty specific and pretty. You have an idea of what you want, and I think the best thing you can do in the nicest, most honest, direct way is just tell the kid and the family, thank you, but this is where we are. We will not be pursuing. And we've even at times offered to help them find somewhere, know someone at maybe a mid-major or Division II, or we're all connected in the game. So it's not just being directly honest with them, but if you can be helpful to the kid and the family, I like to do that because I think there's a place for everyone. But again, it's all honest communication, as direct and as quick as possible, because you don't want to string anyone either way.
I think we have a list of prospects, and specific to graduation years, just a profile as well. And so I think maybe... at some point when we're finalizing the recruiting class and we've been in contact with those prospects in that specific list, I do think there needs to be some respect and some honest feedback. What's happening a lot is the email contact. And we get tons of emails and prospects that are interested in program and our university. And I think we have to go through
through those emails. And we have to, there could be a kid that perhaps we've never seen, or maybe we missed on at some point. So I think we need to be careful in reading, and perhaps something pops up that we feel the profile could be a fit, and there's a follow-up. But Peter, what I would say is, if for some reason we can't respond to hundreds and hundreds of emails, and so if for some reason the profile is not a good fit, then and there's no response from our standpoint, then I don't know if a lot of follow-up is needed from that particular prospect. So I think that's what we're getting at a little bit too, is just a lot of email and just a lot of contact with multiple emails. And I'm not sure. I suppose if there's no response, if there's no reply back, then that means it's probably not going to be a fit, if that makes any sense.
Okay. No, that does. That does. And so it sounds like if you're not hearing back and you are getting, you know, let's say approaching the fall of your senior year, then, you know, maybe it's safe to assume that those programs have moved on. Okay, last kind of final thoughts. What keeps you up at night? What gets you excited, if anything? But just how would you, you know, wrap up how you're thinking about just recruiting in this environment, potential challenges, impact on the transfer portal, whatever it may be, open-ended question. What thoughts do you have? And Travis, we'll start with you.
Well, to be honest about the question, my kids are what keep me up at night, but that's because I have a 6 and a 3-year-old. But with regards to the college recruiting, these calls actually opened up a lot of things that I didn't think about and how hectic it's going to be. So I'm hopeful that there's a clear-headed approach and open communications between programs and players, whether that's players on college programs, whether that's potential recruits, and I'm hoping there's not as much over recruiting or that, you know, I'm trying to be as optimistic as possible. And, you know, within that vein, just hoping that things are, again, as close to normal as they can be in the near term, whether that's summer tournaments, whether that's, you know, getting through the college, even heck, getting through Division I season unscathed. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of things going on, and it's uncharted territory for pretty much everyone involved. So I think that keeping perspective throughout the process is a good place to leave it, because, you know, whether you're a coach, whether you're a player, whether you're a club coach trying to help your players get noticed, there's going to be, you know, a lot of things happening that people haven't gone through before. And, you know, a lot of people involved with this are very experienced and have gone through a lot of different things, but like people on earth right now, not many people have lived through a pandemic. So keeping that perspective, I think, is a good place to be, and trying to, wherever you are in your recruiting process as a family, and, you know, as a player, like, you got to keep that in mind if you're not hearing back. Or, and again, as I kind of hinted at before, control what you can control. And yeah, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to kind of shake out. You know, you're going to put the work into it, and it's going to shake out in the way that it will. So I think just trying to keep that perspective in mind throughout all of this, you know, if you're 2021, 2022, 2023, then that will probably help just, you know, get through it and, you know, maybe enjoy it at times. And hopefully things will be, you know, they probably won't speed back to normal, but they'll get closer to normal as this year goes along, hopefully.
As a young parent, you sound like just a seasoned veteran, Travis, with that that wise advice of stay calm. Everyone's going through the same thing. It's a different process, not just for you, but for everyone. So I'm sure that will be soothing to many people. Jeff, what keeps you up? Any opportunities? Final thoughts on this?
I sleep like a baby. I'm up every hour.
Yeah, just I think staying in control of what you can control, I think is the saying here. Ensure that we are okay with our current group of young men in our program. And then, of course, making sure that our 21 recruiting class and all the young men who have signed are good. And then just based on the dynamics of our current situation around the country, obviously the world, but on campus, just making a good choice and the right decision. So that will be better in the end of it. But this is what this is the challenge, or this is what we've been handed. And so, based on that, just stay in control of everything that we do and the decisions we make, and in the end, everything will be good.
Okay, great. Thank you, Tim. Final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's about focusing on the now for us. We didn't get to play in the fall. We were the only ACC team that didn't play. So for me, it's about enjoying the time I have right now with my team. We're finally, you know, training and playing games. Played our first game yesterday, and so I'm really not concentrating a whole lot in recruiting until the rules change. We're in a good spot with our recruiting classes and our roster numbers for the next few years. And for me right now, it's not a lot in our minds with recruiting. It's about the kids that are here and just making them the best they can be and enjoying, you know, really every day, because you don't know from week to week when you're going to play a game or when there might be a positive test or a quarantine and you might lose some players. So it's really just having fun being around the girls on a daily basis. Recruiting will take care of itself. It's not really a priority in the program right now. Crazy to say, but so much you can't control. Why worry about it? So we're just enjoying training, playing games again. Recruiting will eventually happen, and we'll be ready when it does.
Again, a common theme there, which is let's control what we can control right now, which is the players we have. And when we know more about the recruiting opportunities and the gates open, then we'll get after it at that point. And in the meantime, we'll be ready and preparing. So a lot of common themes. Thank you very much. So one last question just before we send you off here. I'll start with Travis. One coming of age book or movie for players.
She's the Man, a coming of age movie. That's the first movie that came to mind for some reason. It's a 12th Night adaption from when I was in college. That was a funny movie, but, not player specific, but I'm an English major. To Kill a Mockingbird, it's a classic. Haven't read it in a while. Need to do that. But I think especially in a country with a more heightened sense of its racial past, I guess, for lack of a better term, it's a good place to start with that regard and help people understand the social climate, and it's also a very good book to read. So that's what I'll leave it at.
Okay, thank you. Jeff, one piece of advice for players, open-ended, not necessarily about recruiting, but just anything you would offer players.
Yeah, I think I said watch and learn. Watch the game as much as you can, not only the Premier League, but go and seek and the La Liga and all the other Bundesligas, and go and watch just a lot of soccer, have the continued passion and love for it, and continue to improve on every part of your game.
Great. Thank you. Tim, if you could change one thing to improve soccer in the United States, anything, any level, anywhere, what would that be?
Oh boy!
I think it's an easy one.
And I think of about five things. I would change the impact of coaches and administrators in the youth game. I think there's too many people trying to have an impact and a negative impact. I think kids should have a little more freedom and ideas when they're playing at younger ages. Take the reins off the coaches. Let kids kind of learn the game themselves. If you look at some of the models around the world, we have some of the most structured, organized approaches to the youth game that you'll see around the world. So hands-on. And I just love to see the shackles lifted.
Well, I think a lot of people would echo that as taking the shackles off of kids as part of their youth journey in the game. So thank you for that. So listen, thanks so much, gentlemen, taking a good bit of your time, but this has been a fantastic discussion. I know a lot of players, families, and coaches will get a lot out of this. So thanks so much, and I owe all of you a round of golf, and your AD at NC State, Jeff and Tim, probably at dinner as well. So anyway, thanks again. Really appreciate it, and best of luck with what you're doing this spring, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Peter.
So thanks for listening to the Players Podcast, and hopefully you got something out of that discussion where we talked about recruiting during the coronavirus pandemic and some of the nuances that go into the process, some of that seen as well as unseen. So we want to just offer you a few takeaways to just wrap up the discussion and leave you with some parting thoughts. And while our discussion today was really geared toward Division I, we think the big principles that we discuss probably apply to all divisions and all levels. And so we don't think that our discussion was solely only beneficial for D1 programs or players looking to play in D1. The next thing is, when you think about the big picture here and who's being impacted, take some confidence that everyone is in the same boat. Your fellow players as peers are facing the same thing if you're not committed yet, and programs are really facing the same thing. All of these coaches and all of these programs are really trying to deal with this in the same way as best as possible, but no one is really on an island here, even though the recruiting process can feel lonely and isolated at times. Take some comfort that you're not alone, and really everyone is going through this process the exact same way. The next thing is, you're going to see a little bit of everything from programs. Certain programs are approaching it one way and others in their own way. But if you're hearing that people will want to see you in person once the dead period is over, now that that's been extended to the end of May, have some patience and just understand that that's the situation that exists, and it exists again for everyone and all programs who choose to go that route, who don't want to just solely rely on video, but will want to see players in person and probably multiple times. And so if you're uncommitted and you want to continue to explore your options into the summer and into the fall, you're probably wise to just settle in and understand that the process could take a while. But as Tim mentioned, once things get going, they could get really heated up. And so what you can be doing in that time is, I think, a lot of the discussion that you heard today, and is controlling what you control, and that's basically being the best player that you can. The third thing, to steal Tim's quote, there's a lot of panic buying going on, and that's the concept of the bird in the hand versus the risk of waiting and not getting what you want from either the player standpoint or the program standpoint. And you combine that with an extra year of eligibility that players who are currently in college are being offered. And those two dynamics really create the potential for fallout over the next several years to come. And so it's possible that this era that we're in now could manifest and could present for players and programs for years down the road. And it's logical that with each year that passes, the risk of some unforeseen changes diminishes, but just be mindful of some of the dynamics that were discussed today, and just be aware that the impact of this could be with us for a couple of years on forward now. And so we really encourage you to focus on the right fit. prestige, bragging rights. You know, these are temporary joys that will go away. What's harder to go away is a bad fit with a program. And so that leads us into our last point, which is a phrase that, you know, you probably hear a lot if you're on the recruiting trail, and that's buyer's remorse, where coaches and programs say they don't want to have buyer's remorse, so they want to make sure that they take their time to where they really know the player, the person that they're bringing into the program. And that makes all kinds of sense. But based on just how this is playing out, I'm guessing there are going to be some interesting opportunities for uncommitted players as time goes on. And just take the time to make sure that you as the player and the family are finding the right fit as well. Because we believe the consequence of buyer's remorse is far more significant for the player than the programs. The coach and the programs have other players if one player doesn't work out, whereas the player really only has one program they can play for. And so again, we point you to focusing on the right fit. And instead of soccer, school, people, we might encourage you to look at that in a different way and to start with the school, then the people, and then soccer next. So that's a lot, but hopefully you got something out of the discussion and your process and journey, if not easier, has a little bit more information and a little bit more perspective and context to it. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.